Carmel passes a human rights ordinance. Is it a sign of things to come? State Senate Democrats propose LGBT protection statewide. Indiana House Republicans choose a new leader, and the BMV makes changes. That plus Joe Donnelly versus the president, an IU fraternity banished, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 9, 2015. Programming
is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, a new anti-discrimination ordinance passed by one vote in Carmel. It's a compromise proposal. Under the ordinance, business owners who refuse service based on sexual orientation or gender identity could be fined $500. A warning would be issued for a first offense. However, the Carmel City Council approved it on a 4-3 vote. Here is Ron Carter, who voted yes, followed by Lucy Snyder, who voted no.
I find myself in a position of saying, yes, we need to do this, and we need to do it now. And it's an appropriate ordinance when all of the smokescreen is taken away. We need to do it now.
We're trying to balance the rights of those who legitimately say we should be treated fairly and the rights of others who say freedom of religion and the exercise thereof is an inalienable right.
How much of a breakthrough is that vote for gay rights advocates? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, will Carmel become a trendsetter?
Well, we've seen various cities around the state dealing with this particular issues in different ways. And so I wouldn't say they're going to be a trendsetter as a result. But I do think it was significant that this happened there because for a number of reasons. One, it took place in the state's largest viewing audience, which means in this TV market, which means that it got a lot of attention. We'll keep it on the forefront of the minds of a lot of people going forward as we go towards the next session of the legislature. And the fact that it was as close as it was, I think symbolic of how contentious this issue remains statewide and will continue to be until it's dealt with one way or another, probably in the next session of legislature.
Also significant that everybody involved is Republican.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's a Republican county, it's a Republican city, and that's significant too here, and for the other reasons I stated. I do think that it was significant that they did it. I found it interesting that they came to the compromise that they did. And if you look at the various ordinances around the state, they're all different. Right. The language is different in almost every one of them. So that's another indication of how difficult this is to try to do this balancing act that people are trying to do.
Well, I think that's an important point. Gay rights advocates have said that there is no compromise possible here. Same with the folks who are fighting this, and yet it ends up in a compromise in a 4-3 vote.
What it shows is the total lack of leadership at the state level from the governor's office and the leaders in the General Assembly. You can't have a patchwork quilt approach to this. What happens if your business straddles the line between one city and another city and there's one ordinance over here and one ordinance over there? If you have one foot in this, it's this, and one foot in that, it's that. It's ridiculous. You're either pro-discrimination or you're against discrimination. We need to do the four-word fix. Amend the Civil Rights Act and fix the problem once and for all. period.
And again, that is sexual orientation
and gender identity. And it has nothing to do with freedom of religion, because this does you are not required to marry gay people. You are not required to do anything in that regard in the practice of your religion. But if you're in public accommodation, you better not be discriminating.
All right, but if you're in public accommodation in Carmel, you get one free discrimination.
That's right.
Does that make sense?
Not really. It doesn't. Clearly, it was a compromise that was struck in order to get the proposal through the council. It did by a 4-3 vote, so it was obviously very close. And we do have this patchwork approach. And anytime we've seen a patchwork approach to legislation in the past, for instance, the open container law or the... I guess the open container law is the best example I can think of
guns
right now.
Too.
Yeah, and so you have all these different ordinances. The legislature generally comes in and says, okay, this is what the state's going to do, so you don't have that patchwork. I'll be curious to see how that works out in the legislature going forward, because clearly there is no set determined path at this point. I think they're paying a lot of attention to what's going on in places like Carmel and Martinsville and Goshen and all these other places around the state. And they actually are probably going to take their cues from what happens on the local level before they come forward with a proposal in the next legislature.
You know, Jim, you were asking about the significance of this and what impact it might have more broadly across the state. And as Mike pointed out, when you're looking at something occurring with this high profile in this kind of media market, you are going to have an impact. But I would argue that the bigger impact in a different direction would have been if this had not prevailed, even by a close 4-3 vote. You have Mayor Jim Brainerd, who had...
his proposal.
It was his proposal. He wanted to fast-track it to make sure to send a strong signal. You had, I think, 6 of the 7 council members who actually initially were sponsors of the proposed ordinance. And then you, of course, had a lot of groups that set their sights here to say, this is a battleground, we're going to draw the line here, and we need to make an example and try to stop this here. Had those groups prevailed, then I think this would have been far more significant. It is significant. Had it not prevailed, I think it would have been even more so.
All right, to the State House. State Senate Democrats announced plans this week to seek statewide LGBT protections. Senate Minority Leader Tim Lannon says he wants to send a clear signal after the national uproar over the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, known as RFRA. He's not waiting for majority Republicans to take the lead.
I think, unfortunately, we sent the wrong message last year, and it's going to take a while to repair that. This would be a bold move for us to show to the rest of the country and the world that Indiana does not discriminate.
And Delaney, is politics driving this?
I think fairness is driving this. I mean, we have gotten such a black eye nationally because of the governor's performance on this issue, and because the state legislature did not fix the problem. They put a little bracket around it and made it less of a problem than it was when the governor was in charge. But all we need are 4 words. All you need to add are 4 words, and you're either adding those 4 words or you're pro-discrimination. That's what this is all about, and the legislature has to act. And if the Republicans aren't prepared to add those 4 words and none of the other nonsense that appeals to their radical right controlling group in the Republican Party, then Democrats have got to lead the way.
But again, we saw compromise in Carmel. Is there any reason to believe that there can't be compromise in the State House?
Well, I think there are people looking for it now. I want to get to that in a second, but I want to dispute right off the top the idea that you're either for this or you're for discrimination. Mm-hmm. There are people who legitimately believe under religious grounds that this is not the right thing to do, and they have that right to believe that. So to call them for discrimination is wrong, okay? And in my opinion. Now, to go to the issue at hand, there are legislators on both sides of the aisle who are looking at legislation. We've been talking about this for months. I know of
a lot of
Republicans in the Senate that are doing it. I know of Republicans in the House that are doing it. I know Democrats in the House are doing it.
A lot of talk about the Utah compromise.
Well, the Utah compromise is one that people in both, well, it might be to you, but it's not to
others. It's unacceptable to everybody in the LGBT community.
We just saw ordinance passed in Carmel, and I didn't hear any of the people that were for getting something passed say that they weren't going to accept it.
But that includes public incompetence.
But what I'm telling you is they had a compromise there, and they didn't say it was all or nothing.
One shot's fine, but that includes public accommodations.
Saying that on the front end is a negotiation tool, is one thing, Ann, but living with the reality of getting something passed is completely different.
I understand that, Mike.
Politics is
but
the
you're
art of the
have
compromise.
To, the Republicans here. Are going to have to pass it by
Look,
themselves.
They're going to pass. If
they're going to compromise
I absolutely
out public
will tell
accommodation.
You that there will be. This will be dealt with in the next session of the legislature.
If it exempts public accommodations,
look,
it is not a solution.
Look,
and by the way, Eric Miller himself
passes,
said
passes,
that the purpose
then,
of RFRA was to allow them to discriminate.
Passes, but Eric Miller said that. So
excuse me. He was the one
so
with the
what?
Governor
go,
when he signed it.
Yeah, let's go to John. Hard line is not going to get you very far at this point, is it, on either side?
Oh, I think there are reasonable Republicans. I think
I think it's correct that you do have people on both sides of the aisle and in both chambers who are working to find some sort of acceptable compromise, some sort of middle ground. But what will make that challenging is just how strong the opinions are for activists on both sides of the issue. For them, it is black and white. There is no middle ground. And that will make it tough because these groups, again, on both sides, will be very reluctant, I think, to compromise too much. And clearly, there are compromises that probably would be acceptable. But I'm
like what?
As Ann suggests,
one bite might be acceptable, but public accommodations will not.
I agree
will
with you.
Not
I agree with
be
you.
That one of the things
be.
That. Be
so there's been talk. There's been talk of fast tracking this. Talk by some people of even dealing with it in one day on Organization Day in November. The House Speaker says he won't. Suspend the Constitution to make that possible. But I expect that when we get to the end of the legislature in March, this will be in the rearview mirror. Oh.
I think that it will be too, if they're going to pass something. If they don't pass something or if it fails for some other reason, it's going to be an issue that goes beyond. I think they're going to make every effort to pass it as quickly as they can. I think it is interesting that while everyone is searching for a compromise or some way to make a deal. Senator Lannon and Representative Pilath have been able to take a consistent and straightforward approach with this and has helped define what the position is. It's a very clear position. It's very easy to understand. And that's why you're able to have advocates say, it's this. This is fair. This is the way it should be, because the other side hasn't been able to respond with anything in kind.
And if it doesn't include public accommodation, it is not going to be in the rearview
mirror.
It's not going to be in the rearview mirror.
You're going to see this dealt with, and you're going to see it, I hope, dealt with early on in the session, because they should deal with it and should move on.
But they have to have public accommodation.
It may be in the rearview mirror from in a practical sense that the legislation, whatever it is dealt with.
It's going to be a political issue.
It will be
next year,
it will
no
be a
what.
Political issue. And let's not forget the grand irony here.
I'm talking about a policy point.
Correct, as a policy. Yeah. But let's not forget the grand irony. Had advocates of RFRA not been so adamant about enacting that legislation last session, this would not even probably be, if it's an issue, it would be a blip, not the kind of overriding issue we have now.
Or if the governor hadn't admitted he was trying to discriminate.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will the General Assembly solve the civil rights debate in 2016? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, does the Judd McMillan scandal hurt Brian Bosma? 47% said yes. 28% said no, 25% said not for long. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Representative Matt Lehman is the new majority leader in the Indiana House of Representatives. Lehman defeated Sean Eberhardt of Shelbyville in a closed-door session. He will replace Judd McMillan, who resigned in the wake of a sex scandal. Lehman says he's ready to lead.
I am who I am. I'm from a little small town of Burn, Indiana. And probably not a lot comes out of Burn, Indiana, but I do. So that's who I am. And again, look forward to the new adventure in my life and a new chapter for our caucus.
John Katzenberger, is that a good choice?
Well, I think so. In the initial blush, it seems like a good choice. And you have a rural representative atop the caucus with an urban representative and Representative Bosma. This is an important position. They've missed it twice now. So I think that they're all paying very close attention to this, and they can't afford to miss it a third time.
Well, he seems to be have a little more maturity, maybe a little more gravitas than Judd McMillon?
Well, he's socially conservative, but I'm not sure he is as much of a firebrand, or is not maybe as willing to antagonize or engage in very public sparring matches the way that some of his predecessors might. And it maybe is Speaker Bosma suggested, what the doctor ordered right now is perhaps a little bit calmer approach, a friendlier approach, a more collegial approach. Now, whether that holds true during what promises to be a fairly heated session, we'll see. But I think at this point it accomplishes what Brian Bosma probably wanted to accomplish in terms of the gravitas, the even keel that you describe.
Is Matt Lehman up to the job?
Oh, absolutely. This is a very solid choice. He's a guy that's respected by people on both sides of the aisle. He is a person who's passionate about some issues, but he's not the kind of person who is a yeller, screamer, pointer, blame people for disagreeing with him kind of a person at all. And I think that's the right choice for the right time, and it's a good thing for them and a good thing for them to move on with him in that position.
The scandal be forgotten soon?
Well, I mean, other than the fact that Brian Bosma's judgment for the last two majority leaders leaves an awful lot to be desired, it seems to me that he circled the wagons around. He circled the wagons around Judd McMillon right before Judd McMillon resigned. But the other issue with this is Lehman was a sponsor for RFRA, okay? And so the question is, which side does he go?
That's a long list,
but he was there, okay? And it shows where he comes from in the party, and you're going to have the same problem trying to coordinate for any reasonable approach to legislation with the legislature that they're having in Washington. I mean, it's clear that the right-wing Republicans are in control nationally and statewide.
Moving on. A BMV spokesman told a legislative committee this week that culture changes at the troubled state agency won't come from quick fixes. Peter Lacey said that changes are underway in response to an audit that found $50 million in overcharges. But he said it will take years to carry out all of the necessary reforms. John Schwanes, is that acceptable?
I'm not sure what the alternative is, really, because the agency can do some things unilaterally. But other aspects of this will require legislative changes in terms of the fee structure and what is it, 1,200 different fees that are assessed by the agency now. Some of them don't necessarily match what's in Indiana code, so it becomes almost a judgment call on the part of employees at the local level. So there is work taking place inside the agency, which has gotten high marks even from one of the agency's harshest critics, Dan Forrestal, Indianapolis Democrat in the House. So if anybody were to say you're moving too slowly, it would be Dan Forrestal, and he says he's heartened by what he's seen.
By progress, but I mean the BMV's had troubles since the 80s.
Yeah, it's an agency that has been allowed to get to a point where it's able to enact fees that aren't covered by legislation, and get to a situation where it's a real mess at this point, and really is going to require that complete overhaul that they're starting to contemplate. That will take time. I'm sure that Representative Forrestal and other critics will be patient for a while. But they're going to have to continue to push this forward to a conclusion that means that they streamline the fees, that they are all based in legislation and statute, and that they're fair, and that the people who have paid more than they should pay are compensated for what they've paid. They need to start fresh, and they need to get through. It seems like they're through that initial point. Okay, here's the problem. Now how do you fix it?
Yeah, they need breathing space here. They need...
Hey, look, they've been in charge 11 years, okay? 11 years,
the Republicans.
And Mitch Daniels said that he had reformed the BMV. Remember, it was going to run like a business. It was going to be clockwork. It was going to be smooth. It was going to be exemplary.
The branches are the best they've ever been.
Agency is in a quagmire. And, you know, what are we talking about? You wear clean jeans at the same time you rip off the consumer? Great. I mean, the governor's been MIA in terms of every single management decision made during his 3 years. And well, this is just another example.
Everybody goes to the BMV. People at home understand BMV issues when they don't understand other things about government. It's a political problem.
And as far as consumer approach to the BMV, they have a 98% approval rating right now because
the
experience of people going to the branches is outstanding. They don't have the long waits.
The last time I went to a branch,
15 minutes or less.
It took me seven. And I used to give up an entire morning.
How much more did you pay than you were supposed to?
Well, but let me say this: Kent Abernathy is doing exactly what he was assigned to do. The people on the interim committee, both Republicans and Democrats, praised him for what they're doing. He's exactly right. There are 1,200 different fees that they have to charge in calculations on taxes at the BMV, which is crazy. It's ridiculous.
Right.
They've got to streamline that. So there's two pieces here. One, the internal operation that they're doing where they're going to have a constant review of these things. They've already put in place some of the things that came out as a result of the report, made those changes. But there's also going to be legislation that Senator Yoder and Representative Soliday are going to have that's going to change this and streamline the so we don't have 12,000 or 1,200 different calculations to make. So they're in the process. I talked to Dan Forrestal, Democrat member who's been the most vocal about criticizing him afterwards. He said that they have reached out to him every step of the way. They're doing exactly what they need to be doing. Even he's in agreement that this is going in the right direction. And it is going to take time because they got systems that are outdated. Computers that they need to upgrade and all kinds of things.
So glad it's run like a business.
You hit it on the head, Jim, in terms of why there hasn't been even more uproar. Now, granted, we've had class action lawsuits, and it's been very high profile in the courts. But for the average Hoosier, they were just pleased that, in your case, 7 minutes you could get in and out.
Yep.
Now, had those improvements not occurred,
then it'd be
convinced that with the overcharges and so forth, then you would have had people storming the Bastille, ready to string somebody up. And it still needs to be fixed. But that's why there was some breathing room, I think, and some allowance.
I think you're right. The president is threatening to veto a massive defense spending bill that includes a mental health care package introduced by Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly. Donnelly is still hopeful that Barack Obama will sign the bill into law. If not, the Democratic senator is once again willing to oppose the president.
We're going to work, I think, in the Senate to override the veto. Hopefully the House will do the same thing. And if we're not able to do that, we will attach this to another vehicle that has to move through.
Mike McDaniel, does it surprise you to hear Donnelly say that?
No. As we've talked about for months, the senator is passionate about the idea of we have way too many military who are committing suicide, who have mental problems long after their experiences in their different deployments, and this is unacceptable. And he's trying to deal with that. Everybody thinks that's the right thing to do, and that's part of this bill. I think there are votes to override it in both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House, and he's going to be part of that override, and that's the right thing to do because, one, we need this defense bill, and two, we need the programs that Senator Donnelly is trying to pass in this legislation.
So as a Democrat, whose side are you on, Joe Donnelly's or
Barack
Obama's?
There's no question that the issue that Mike raises on this, on the mental health concerns and other things like bulletproof vests and all for our servicemen and women fighting are very important. Obviously, this is in a framework of a lot of other finance bills, and it's caught in the middle. I am confident, ultimately, it will pass because this has been Joe Donnelly's signature issue, and everybody agrees it's the right thing to do.
Finally, an Indiana University fraternity has been shut down after video surfaced of a member performing a sex act on a stripper. IU workers removed the Greek letters from Alpha Tau Omega. The national fraternity closed the chapter. The IU Office of Student Ethics is investigating, and Greek life has been given another black eye.
People need to realize that maybe one fraternity or a few fraternities that may partake in something like this, it doesn't speak for all the fraternities or Greek life in general.
Seeing something like that isn't really a good look for the university as a whole. Most people in the Greek system aren't like that, so it's probably a good move.
And Delaney, are fraternities and sororities outdated?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that speaks for all the fraternities and sororities, but I have seen discussions where presidents of universities are talking about putting house mothers back into the fraternities and the sororities. I know they're supposed to be adults, but they're not full-fledged adults. Because they can't drink, or they shouldn't be drinking, and those things are going on. So, I don't know. I just think it's unfortunate for the university and for the Greek system in general.
for a lot of people, but this particular fraternity's had problems going back to the early 90s. I mean, it's, are universities too lenient with what goes on in Greek houses?
I think they tried to enforce their rules on these activities, but they just, you know, it's hard to deal with these situations when you don't know what's going on behind those walls. There's no adult supervision, if you will. As Ann indicated, they're talking about, some are talking about going back to house mothers, but that in itself, I remember having house mothers when we were in school, and you know, they were usually asleep by 7 o'clock. So
what did that?
Unless
they're
up at
3 o'clock.
Unless they're up at 3 o'clock.
We need to, after 7 o'clock.
I think we're going to end it there. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.